Good morning. My name is Regina Mason. I live in Monterey County and in a community called Seaside, California, and my background is in child welfare. And the Village Project came to fruition as a result of my understanding of the lack of culturally appropriate therapeutic services for the African American community. So I am just going to talk a little bit about how the agency got founded. We were able to, for the past, I'd say 20 years, I've been involved in the NAACP, and I've been historically doing focus groups in the community among young people along with adults. And one of the things that was real clear is that their needs were not being met from the academic standpoint, the clinical needs were not being met, housing issues, and so on and so forth. And because I work in child welfare, I do a lot of research on where the legislation is, where the money is, and why isn't it coming into the African American community. And so one of the things that we had the fortune to do is the Mental Health Services Act got passed, and Mel, who is my husband, is going to do an introduction, or he's going to talk to you about the Village Project and the services and so on and so forth. But he was and is the only African-American male therapist in Monterey County. And so when the Mental Health Services Act got passed, I started engaging people, and we brought a group of people from the grassroots community together, along with people from the child welfare system in terms of people that had gotten their kids taken away, and other African-American female therapists in our community, people from the clergy community, and just a whole host of grassroots level people. And out of that came the services that we were going to start off by providing, and that was going to be clinical services. And so I happened to write for grants, and that's just something I volunteer to do. So my role in the Village Project, I'm not on the board of directors, but I am one of the people that is the main volunteer, and I write for grants to get programs going, or not programs going, but to ensure that money is coming into that agency on a consistent basis. We started out by having just the clinical piece, but what we found was people were having problems getting to the facility, even though it's right in the community, but some people were living in other neighboring communities, and they didn't have gas money or bus tickets and so on. So I did a little research and found some women's funds to bring in and provide gas vouchers and help with various other deficits that they were having. And we also found out, for the first year, we only provided the clinical services. The next year, we started providing tutorial support, and I secured some funding to hire some tutors. So, and we've partnered with some churches in the community, and they go to the school, pick up the kids, bring them back to the site, and they get one-on-one tutoring, because a lot of these kids that are in our therapeutic services are falling through the cracks academically. So we're just basically meeting their needs where they're at. But funding is always an ongoing issue in the African-American community, in that when money comes into the counties, and there are 58 counties in the state of California, that there's legislation that gets passed, there's bills that get passed, and we seem to never be at the table. And so I do a lot of research for the Village Project in terms of making the board aware of what funding streams there are available, ensuring that we organize, get to the Board of Supervisors meeting, sit on these committees that are dishing out the funds, so that we are at the table getting much needed resources for our people. And I can say that if we did not have the Village Project, there would be no African-American-based agency in Monterey County. It is the only one, and there are a lot of sororities and fraternities and that kind of thing, but they tend to have no staff, they're not funded, and so we're collaborating with a lot of those groups in terms of a lot of the ongoing services that we're providing. So I'm going to turn this over to Mel, because he's the primary executive director and clinical director, and he's wearing several different hats. And so he's going to talk to you about the success stories and the services more and from a standpoint of someone that's there on a daily basis, because I basically volunteer after I get off work for my 8-hour-a-day job. But I just want to thank you all for being here and hearing all of our presentations this morning.
Probably don't need the, huh? Okay, let me see.
Well, I could probably. Okay,
because I may not need it. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, then I don't need a mic. Okay.
They're recording it now.
Huh?
They're recording.
Oh, I see. So I do need a mic. Okay. Well, as Regina pointed out, my name is Mel Mason, and I'm a co-founder, certainly along with her. Of an African-American focused agency called the Village Project Incorporated, and it's located in Seaside, California. It's the town where she and I both grew up. I'm a little bit older than her, but we both grew up in that same town, and we know a lot of the people, you know, in that community. And I think that's one of the one of the things that kind of gave us a leg up in putting together this this organization, is because people do know us. And so that there's a certain sense of comfort and safety, you know, in knowing somebody that's about to provide some services for a community that had never existed before. A little bit about my own background, just to kind of give you a sense of how I've been directed for much of my life. I'm a former member of the Black Panther Party. It's okay to applaud. And at the with the demise of the party, I mean, I lost a lot of friends, both to death and to also false incarceration. Some people were still struggling to get out after 40 plus years. But, you know, so some of us paid a dear price for standing up for freedom, you know, for oppressed people, for Black people and other oppressed people. I'm also a former leader of the Socialist Workers Party, another organization that the FBI didn't like. Had my moments with the FBI. Actually ran for president of the United States in 1984 as a member of the Socialist Workers Party. So a Black socialist ran for president of the United States. I didn't win. But one of the things that we did win, though, was and I think this makes it possible for us to have the kind of organizations and agencies that we have today, is that we won a lawsuit, a number of us, against the FBI in the mid-'80s. Because of the use of the counterintelligence program, you know, which we not only saw as being unconstitutional, but also illegal, and we thought that some of them should have gone to jail. They didn't go to jail, but a U.S. federal court ruled in our favor and did, in fact, find that what they had done to us, you know, was not only unconstitutional, but it was illegal. I've been a city councilman, and I've been also a longtime member of the NAACP. With my wife, and I'm currently in my third term as president of the Monterey County branch of the NAACP, and we just came here from a four-day convention of the state NAACP, so if I seem a little bit mentally discombobulated, that's the reason. But in terms of the Village Project, as Regina pointed out, and she is such a great partner, both in life and also in this work, we had the opportunity after the passage of the Mental Health Services Act in 2004 to do something that we had been wanting to do for some time. Because if you remember, the Mental Health Services Act had as its primary mandate that county behavioral health services had to do a much better job, and we felt in some cases a first-time job, of outreaching and engaging and providing these critical services to communities and populations of people who had heretofore been historically either underserved or unserved, and depending on where you were, African Americans fitted in one of those two categories. They certainly fitted in that category in our community, in our area. When we had the focus groups that Regina talked about, you know, we invited behavioral health there as well, and I worked in behavioral health for a number of years, and they were really happy when I left because one of the issues was around Black people and minorities in general, but black people certainly, you know, being able to access those services. And it wasn't that black people couldn't walk into the door of a mental health clinic, but it was how they felt after they got there that counted. It was how they were treated when they got there that counted. And so in many cases, you had black people that only showed up for one time, and then they never came back. And people would inevitably write them up as being resistant to treatment. You know, that's a catch word for black people not liking where they were. And so when we had the focus group, and I warned my former colleagues and stuff, you know, please bring your thickest skin, because you guys are going to catch holy hell in this meeting, but it's going to be good holy hell if you take it the right way, because we have the Mental Health Services Act to guide us now. And they came in and they called holy hell from black people who said that they had all kinds of bones to pick with mental health, with white, predominantly white agencies, et cetera. And they wanted to also debunk the myth that black people don't go to therapy, black people don't go to counseling, you know. Black people don't want to do that because of the stigma, and I'm not saying that doesn't exist. That black people don't go there because, you know, we don't want to be seen after slavery and the black codes and, you know, the fall of Reconstruction and Jim Crow segregation, that we are somehow weak and crazy. We didn't believe that. And so, to make this short, on the day that we opened up our agency, because we took to heart what they said when they said that, if we have an agency that looks like us, as one person said, it feels like us, it looks like us, you know, that it's like home to us, we'll go to therapy and counseling and anything else that agency produces in terms of services. And so on the day that we opened up in May of 2008, we're on the second floor of a building. We had black people, you know, older black people, young adults, children, you name it, lined up from the coffee table that we had at that time that was serving as a front office, all the way down two flights of stairs, all the way out into the parking lot. And we've been working like this ever since. You know, we are continuing the struggle to get, thank you, it's all right. You know, our folks are good. And so, and I'm sure that, you know, Dr. Woods is putting up, you know, the stuff on the board, on the screen. I can't follow it, but that's okay. But just put it up there. People can read it, because I think the story of the Village Project and stuff, you know, is hard to encapsulate that into a PowerPoint. But and thank Dr. Woods for helping to construct this for us. But and to give you an example of the work, you know, one of the very first sessions that I had was with a youngster who, even the family said, this boy is crazy. His behavior was off the charts. He was about 9 years old. And so on the day that we had our first session, and this is going to show you the difference between how we work and maybe how other agencies work. And this is not to disparage anyone else, but this is to certainly tout how good we do our thing. The youngster came in. His mom and dad came in. And then he had uncles that came in, and then he had both sets of grandparents that came in, and then they had a whole bunch of other people who were cousins, people who called themselves uncle, who weren't blood related, people who called themselves aunt, who weren't blood related, but obviously had a lot of really heavy dynamics and impact inside their family. And so as they got in there, I realized we didn't have enough room, so we had to go out and get chairs. I had to move a desk, and we had a circle of about 20 people, including the youngster. Then one of the grandmothers said, Mr. Mason, I believe our pastor is here now, and he may be out in the lobby. Is it okay if he comes in? And I said, well, if it's okay with everybody else, it's certainly okay with me. They went out, brought the pastor in. The pastor's role was to have us all hold hands in a circle while he prayed for the family. And then he prayed for God to make me a good therapist that day. And that might have been one of the best sessions that I ever conducted. But when I also do cultural competency trainings, and that's one of the services that we provide in our agency. And so when we talk about this, and we talk about if you're working with black people, you know, that you're going to be working, you know, a lot of times and stuff within the spiritual context. And it doesn't mean, we're not talking about religion. All black people are not religious, so-called. But you're going to have to understand spirituality. And if you don't, you know, then you're going to miss something that is incredibly important, you know, to your treatment and to you being a healer, working with black people. And so a lot of people thought, well, I believe in Freud. We said Freud made the biggest mistake in the world when he kicked God out of the treatment center. So what we did with one particular client was to recognize that she was depressed. Was she depressed? Yes, she was depressed. But she was depressed because she had lost faith in God. She had lost faith. She had lost, was losing her faith, period. And so instead of sending her off to a doctor somewhere to get diagnosed and then hopefully prescribed some kind of antidepressant, the antidepressant for her lied in the books of Ruth and Esther. And so what our work was around was her every day picking something significant out of those two books in the Bible, because those are the only two books that have women, you know, named in the book as books, named in the Bible as books. And so for every day, she was to pick out something in one of those books to use as a mantra every day. Needless to say, she did okay with herself. She's no longer seeing us. She's doing well. And so I just wanted to do that, give you these two examples, because that's how we do our work. You know, we have to do our work from a cultural context, from a cultural perspective. And if you do that, you know, then your outcomes are going to be probably a heck of a lot better. In our case, it's been pretty close to 100%. We have young people who are now understanding something called Ma'at. Ma'at is a code of conduct of ancient African people, you know. And so when youngsters realize that people who look like them thousands of years ago put together something that was going to guide and how they were going to function in a society so that they would be the absolute best that they could be, they begin to take that and take that to heart. So we have had youngsters who were having all kinds of behavioral problems walking around talking to their teachers who did not understand what was going on with them about my aunt. I got 5 minutes to go? Okay, all right. Or 5 minutes? Okay, I'm trying to stay within this time frame. It's a little hard to just encap, you know, to talk in an abbreviated way about what it is that we do. Because, and as Regina pointed out as well, we decided at some point, and thank goodness we were able to get interns, and we started training people to do this work. And if you go to our big website, one of the things that we mentioned there is that we are training revolutionary therapists. We're not training therapists just to be able to stand up and quote psychodynamic theory and Bowenian family theory and all that. I don't want to deride those too much. But we're going to talk about, you know, we're talking about training therapists, you know, who are going to be able to work across all cultures, regardless of who they are. And we were recently rewarded for our effort by being certified by the University of Southern California as a field training site for their distance learning people. You know, and we've already had one that came through there and stuff, and now they want to send us 15 and 20 people, which we're not capable of doing. We have an after-school program that Regina pointed out, in which we went out and we hand-selected young African Americans, you know, to work with these youngsters, and we especially focus on those young people who have been either kicked out of other after-school programs or weren't even allowed to come into after-school programs because of their behaviors. And believe me, their behaviors were absolutely atrocious. We don't make any excuses for the behaviors. But when we get them into the program and we work with them and their teachers, the first thing that they learn and the parents learn and teachers learn is that we don't have low expectations for these youngsters. We have very, very high expectations for these youngsters. And we're not putting up anything that's unrealistic. But this is what they have to work to do, and this is our faith in them. And so when they come to after-school program every day, they know that they're coming there. There's not a single young male that walks in there with his pants on his butt. And everybody dresses appropriately, because one of the things that we teach is respect. If you're talking about having people respect you, then you first got to show that you respect yourself. And so when they come into those classrooms, then we're talking with them about, okay, this is what we expect you to do. We expect you to work really hard, because we know if you work really hard and you take this seriously, you're going to do well. And I think, as my wife would have pointed out if she had a little bit more time, is that we recently got star test results back from on probably most of these young people. And many of them have gone from very low, a very low basic, to a very high basic, and even higher than that. Grade point averages have, 1 minute, have gone up tremendously. But the big thing for us is that the Village Project is a community organization. It is a community agency. It is a community place to be. And we have people who sometimes just walk in to say hi. They don't come there to be clients. They don't come in. We call our clients warriors, by the way. They don't come there to be clients, but they walk in sometimes just to say hi. Or as one person said, I just come in to touch the wall. I had one young person that came in because we have African healing masks all over the place. Just walked in. He just wanted to touch the mask and look at it and just kind of feel at home and then leave. And for some people, this is how they start their day. So when we start talking about keeping statistics on all of the people that we have as quote-unquote clients, you know, we have our own statistics. The county has its. And ours are much more broadly encompassing because we take into effect that we're not an agency that just stands separate and apart from the rest of the community. But we are part of the community, we are central to the community, and everybody sees the Village Project as their own. Thank you.